Hello there. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. I'm Ali Smalders.
And I'm Lori Harrison.
And we have today three guests for you to listen to, two sisters and one male cousin. The sisters are Mary McLeod Harris and Joan McLeod Congdon, and their cousin is George Higgins. Well, I think we should start with some of your getting together as a family when you were growing up on Lopez in the 30s, long time ago, almost 80 years.
Right. So I think we're going to ask Joan to begin by telling us about what Sundays were like when they were kids, what the Sabbath was like when they were being raised up on Lopez.
The Sabbath was one day of church. We started out going to Sunday school, and then we sat through church service, and then we came home, and Mother always started a meal. And if there was somebody at church that maybe didn't have a family, they were invited to come and share. The main meal was at noon. And then we often went back to church in the evening for a program for the younger kids. And that was pretty much it.
That was in your family.
That was in my time.
I didn't get to go back in
the
evening. But we were going to Center Church at that time.
Center Church.
Which was a congregational church.
Uh-huh. So you go, and you all lived pretty close. It was maybe a 1 mile walk?
Yes.
About
something
1 mile like walk, and we could actually see the farm from the church right in the middle of the island. And that was, Sunday was a very special day, and the only time we so-called broke the Sabbath was if the hay was laying on the field and rain was predicted, then Dad would perhaps go out and do some farm work. But normally, nothing was done but just family and church.
Mm-hmm. And part of that family was your Aunt Kate.
Aunt Kate.
Yes.
Now, she lives in the house that is today owned by Kim and Todd, that was Jenny Harris's and Bob Rowland's house, the bright house, a little bit south of the school.
Right.
That was your Aunt Kate's house. So what did you guys do at Aunt Kate's?
Well, we often went on Sundays, late afternoon, and either had just visit time or a meal. Mm-hmm. Aunt Kate's kitchen was always about 95 degrees because she had a big cook stove there. She always had the tea kettle on, and that would be singing in the background. Mm-hmm. But she had no children, so she was very firm that children should be seen and not heard. And she had this stick, a cane. And Kate was crippled, probably from probably born with a hip that was dislocated. And so she was lame, and she walked with a cane. And when we might start giggling or something, she'd stamp this cane on the floor and give us a look that make us.
Well, we weren't
quiet.
The only family there. Usually on those Sundays, it was Aunt Eva and Uncle Owen,
yeah,
and George and Jean that would show up.
Okay. So children were seen and not heard.
Well,
what did children being seen and not heard do?
Well, we just sat there, I guess.
And just kept their mouths shut.
I can remember the time that I showed up with lipstick, and she says, "What's on your face? What's on your lips?" And well, what are you going to say to her?
And she also thought, as young girls, we should wear long stockings. And we used to be able to take them off at Easter time. Didn't matter what time of year Easter came. That was a big day to get through. And so one time she told me, she said, if you don't keep those legs covered, you're going to have rheumatism when you grow older.
Well, that's what she had.
she's kind of right.
We all end up with rheumatism.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Now, I think I heard a story, though, George, that you weren't always just seen and not heard. Didn't you do a prank of putting some wood down the well?
Well, we all did. my brother and Duncan and everybody that
being
was out there.
Mary and Joan's brother.
Right.
Anyway, we dropped wood down there until it was full, and then my dad and their dad and had to go there and get the wood out for what reason, I don't know. They never used the well. There
was a
well beside it, covered with boards, but they always got their rope, their water. She always got her water from across the road from Walter Gellinger.
Right.
I think the pump house is still there.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So you boys went out and took little pieces of wood and dropped them down the well?
How old were you,
George?
Oh, we were old enough to ride a bicycle up there with axe and chop wood. I don't know, 13, 14?
I suppose.
Old enough to know better.
Yeah. And you say that what you did on Sunday, it was extraordinary. Well, being a boy, I got to get up in the morning at 6 and go out and milk cows. I didn't lollygag around home and get ready for church.
But you did walk to church. You walked to Center Church.
Yeah. No, I rode my mother sometime.
Well, I think Aunt Eva must have been
a teacher.
And then
after Sunday school, they'd keep us in for the regular sermon. And I'd go and get in this car. I'd sit in the back seat, the back row, and start coughing. And I'd have to go out for air where the rest of the guys were
stuck.
I very seldom stayed for the full lollygag sermon.
Well, we didn't know it was a sermon, George. We just saw this preacher in the black suit standing up there reading out of the Bible and knew we weren't supposed to talk.
Was the church full in those
days?
Oh,
no.
No.
There weren't.
No.
Actually, I told somebody once there was only about 35 people on Lopus Island that ever attended church in those years.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody didn't go to church.
Uh-huh.
Now, was this Mr. Goodrow who was the... Yeah, that's
Mr.
Goodrow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, after that, they had other ministers, but...
And I don't think he got any pay for it. They'd have a bazaar once a year, and they'd sell
that
all
was
kinds
what the
of
guild
things
did.
That he got the money for that.
Mm-hmm. No, he had a salary. It was about $5.
Wasn't much.
No, it wasn't much, yeah. But I remember the church board had a salary for him, not much. This is hard times.
We're talking
30s.
1930-something. Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting thing is we never knew we were poor. We had lots of food. And we had clothes. Maybe they're a handy-down. Mary was always my I got everything of hers.
She was 4 years older. So.
Right.
Yeah.
4 years between us. And Aunt Kate bought me my first dress. And to this day, I still remember it was navy blue, a little red trim, and little buttons down the front.
And a bought dress, not
a
made
one. No, she ordered it out of Sears and Roebuck catalog.
How old do you think you were at the time?
I think I was 14.
14 for your first store-bought dress?
Yeah. Well, Mary,
what did you wear before that?
Well, I think I remember Dad sending
her.
No, Mother, fortunately, could sew. And Mother made really nice, she really could sew well. But I remember when Gwen was born, Dad sending to the Sears Roebuck catalog and getting three dresses for a dollar for me. There was nothing to them. There was no sleeves. I mean, they were just little dresses. But I can remember how impressed I was because I got three new dresses.
Oh, yeah. And then see, eventually I got them, and then our younger sister, Gwen, came up wearing them years later.
We got a lot of good
out of
them.
Gwen.
Poor Gwen.
Yeah, right.
Gwen couldn't speak English, could she?
Well, she had a little trouble with it.
She always had an accident.
I don't remember that.
She didn't, Mother didn't know. I don't know why Mother didn't correct her. Mother thought maybe she thought it was cute, but she didn't speak all her words clearly.
Mm-hmm. I'm learning something right now that I didn't know.
We wanted to talk a little bit about Woodman Hall, too, and what that meant for you all as a family and individuals back in those days. What can you tell us about what activities took place there?
Well, I think the main recollections I have of Woodman Hall, it was where all the social life of the island really was. And they would have movies, and the commercial club would have dances, I guess.
Was the commercial club the forerunner of the Chamber of Commerce?
Yes.
Yes. But that was in later years. That's in the 50s. But the earlier years, there was no movies. Oh, what was the Chautauqua?
Your brother put on the movies.
My brother Duncan played the movies for us, that's true. They picked up the big reels down at the post office and played the movies. But that was like in the 50s, I think.
Had to be before 50s, because I went away to high school in 45, and I remember being down there sweeping, and it was a very cold, blustery day in the fall, and it was the first year I was in Cedar Willy going to high school, and I must have been around Thanksgiving time, because that's when we came home. Only time we came home was on holidays, and I was sweeping, and I caught a terrible head cold. And the next day, I'm going back to Cedar Willy, and somebody said to my mother, Joan was so upset getting on that ferry, she was just crying. Well, I wasn't crying. I had such a terrible head cold. My eyes and my nose were red.
Streaming.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Joan mentioned it. When they had the dances, the commercial club women furnished the food for the midnight snack. And I assumed it was about midnight. Because
it was around 1, 2 o'clock.
The farmers couldn't come to the dance until whatever, you know, after the cows were milked. So it didn't start at 5, 6, or 7 in the evening. These dances probably didn't start till 9, 10 o'clock.
Did the teenagers come too?
If there were any, I don't remember.
They had benches all the way around. And we were all little wallflowers sitting all the way around
benches
watching.
They were
adults.
Making...
Right in front of the grandstand, they had chairs, and Don Sales, he was the guy that lived down in Alex Bay, and he had some kind of a horn, and so he decided to go down on the floor, and he was being drunk too, and he stepped down and thought he was going to step on a chair and then to the floor, and there wasn't any chair there. He would almost think he broke his leg. He fell down on the floor. Well, it almost drove his leg into his body, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, Joan, about now we better tell about why my mother ceased letting us go and watch these people dance.
Well, you know, you have to tell that story, but I was thinking, what a difference. Children were really, they just had to fit in, whatever was going on.
Absolutely.
You go to Aunt Kate, you have to behave. You go to Woodman Hall, sit there.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And
no, we didn't say, hey, we don't want to go.
There was nothing that was really
we ain't going.
Arranged
we're
for you
home.
Guys.
No.
it was how you fitted in adult living.
Mm-hmm.
And you did a lot of watching.
Yes.
And I wonder, how much do kids learn
from
that?
Well, the kids, we have friends that said they learned everything under the dining room table.
That's right.
The women sitting around gossiping and telling about who was pregnant and who wasn't.
Jopping.
And they were under the dining room table listening.
Wow.
Well,
And when you all say that you were sitting around on the benches around the edge of Woodman Hall, is that because nobody asked you to dance? Could you have danced?
Oh, we were just children.
They were too young.
Children don't dance. Children come and sit on the outside.
Yeah. No, we didn't.
That's what
dance.
I mean, that was absolutely
no
thought about, is this going to be fun for them?
No.
No, they just had to do it.
We were just expected
to behave
ourselves.
Expected
to
behave.
Mm-hmm.
They were grown ups. There wasn't that much children there anyway.
Of course, that was true for me too, to tell you the truth. But
And so upstairs in Woodman Hall, the women were up there.
There was a kitchen.
Some of the women had gone to the community club. They'd be up there preparing the meals.
Uh-huh. And mother would always make this
potato salad,
chocolate.
Somewhere.
I wanted to say sour cream chocolate cake. Sour cream. With a 7-minute frosting with peppermint flavor. Mm-hmm. And that 9x13 pan always went. And we always hoped there'd be a piece left over to go home. But we weren't always.
Because you would
lucky.
Not get any of that.
No, no. Mother baked that thing and that was going to Woodman Hall.
But it went for the adults.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not
yes.
for the kids.
No, no.
Wow.
And even when we were at Aunt Kate's house, Aunt Kate was saying, would you like another piece of cake?
Mm-hmm.
And Mother would say, no, they don't need another piece of cake. She even answered,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I remember when she was married to Nick Davidson, when he was living, Nick Davidson slashed all the brush down on Hodgson's Marsh and
mm-hmm.
Weeks's Marsh, Davis Marsh, and they didn't have no money, so they gave him Long Island, and then he raft some team of horses and stuff out there, and they planted peas, I believe, out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was...
Where's Long Island?
It's just west of Richardson. Charles Island, Scripps Island, Bates Island, Charles Island.
Okay, so you were going to tell the story about what happened at Widmer Hall that night.
Okay, Mary, do you want to relay it or do you want me to?
I don't think it makes any difference. We're going to tell it the same. Go ahead, Joan.
Well,
we had a 1924 Chevrolet.
Must,
I remember
you
that
You must
much.
Remember that there was no social drinking on Lopez. There was no nice cocktail lounge to go to. So the men would go to, I guess they bought their liquor on in the harbor.
There was a
Friday Harbor.
Eston Carr took a little boat from the Lopez Village to Friday Harbor every Saturday. And somebody would order liquor from the liquor store over there.
Anybody wanted a bottle, not this Saturday. They could do it a week
ahead.
Well,
they could do it any time, but it seemed like Saturday must have been the big day, because they all showed up at Woodman Hall with this brown paper sack.
Yeah, a bottle in a brown paper sack. And I don't even know who it was, but somebody got out drinking a little too much and got sick to their stomach and threw up on the side of my family's car. So when Mother and Dad went out to get to go home.
With you kids?
With vomit all over the side of the car. My mother said, "Well, Malcolm, we don't have to bring the children and expose them to this anymore." And so that was the last
you
time we went
was,
to Woodman Hall.
That was me.
Oh. I think fortunately you were too young.
Did you then stay home alone and the parents went?
No, they didn't.
No, I think Dad, lots of times Dad would go and start this. This commercial club was run by about, what,
very
four people?
Yeah.
Roy Jensen and Dad and a couple others. And he might have gone to do something, but basically, and that was very much like when they started the Grange. I remember the mother and dad going, and one night one of us made a big fuss about always being left home alone, which we weren't, but I don't know. I think it was me that said it. And Mother felt so bad that the next Saturday night or whatever Grange night was, she said, "Well, I think I'll stay home." Well, you know, looking back, how stupid, Mother, you should have just gone. Mm-hmm. But, it was... Yeah, and I do remember us being left home in the summer when they went to something. Maybe it was Grange.
Yeah.
Or a commercial club
but
meeting.
We were older
they
then.
Went to commercial club meetings mm-hmm. in the homes.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of music did they play at the Woodman Hall?
A piano, saxophone, and a drum.
It made a lot of music.
Yeah,
it made a lot of noise anyway.
How did it sound,
Philip,
Joan?
And that hall has wonderful acoustics in it, even today.
Mm-hmm. Well, who would have the horn?
Well, Ed Norman played saxophone.
Right, but that's later.
Guy McCauley had a horn.
That's later.
And, how much later do you want?
Well, I want Roy Jensen and
I didn't know Roy Jensen played anything.
Oh, yeah, Roy played the saxophone and Emil Craig played what?
No, he played, it was a horn.
I think so. And then there was somebody that played some drums. I don't know, but that's the kind of music.
But
it
had rhythm to it, so
everybody got out there. Band, the music for the dance.
I didn't go back in the 1920s.
Well, I'm sorry, but I did.
You were in the 20s?
I was there, George, don't worry.
George, you've got a different story about music. Didn't you... Your parents wanted you, your mother wanted you to learn to play the violin, is that right?
Oh, there's a guy named Presley, he was a high school teacher down at Port Stanley, I believe. And he made the rounds of the island and tried to, make a living.
Okay.
And
drum up some business.
Huh?
Drum up some business.
Drum up some business, yeah. I don't know if he had any drums or not. But anyway, he got out with Lovejoy, gave him a horn, and Albert couldn't even make a note on it, couldn't even blow it. And my mother talked her into giving me a violin, and that all big screech, and she'd give every couple of weeks, he'd come by and he'd listen to the progress, and she'd give him a chicken, and my dad came home, and the chicken business stopped. I don't know how long Albert had a horn, but...
So you aren't playing the violin to this day?
Never played no. I couldn't even play a ukulele.
Well, come on now. We all played ukuleles.
Who started you on the ukulele?
Well, John Hill was a teacher that came from I don't know where, from the city, and he was a fairly good teacher, I guess. I think he started.
He was a good ball player.
And he started music, and that's where the Glee Club came in. He had some of us singing music. It was called the Glee Club. And we all had to send to the catalog and get a ukulele because we were going to have a little ukulele orchestra.
Did the ukulele come from the Sears catalog,
too? Oh, of
too?
Course. Yeah, I still have it. It's red.
In a bright red.
You
red
still have it?
I have it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my golly.
And we all, of course, took turns. Whoever went to the... We couldn't all go at once.
And sometimes we'd have a musical festival at the house, and my brother had a cornet. And we had a mandolin, and we had a violin, and we had the piano, and we had Dad's chanter of the bagpipes, so we could just all blow something and
you know
make
that,
a terrible
we had a little
noise.
Accordion.
Drive your mother.
Oh, there was a little accordion too.
Came from Sears Roebuck. Little.
Oh my gosh!
And did your mother direct the music?
No.
Well, she would play the piano, and we all would do something. That was entertainment at home Saturday night.
Did you sing at the piano?
Well, I guess that's how we learned to sing, didn't we? Most of the singing. I mean, for myself, all I could play was church hymns because I knew what they were. But Mother did go to Anacortes once and come back with some music. Her music was a little bit much for us, for me. Mm-hmm. But, no, I guess we learned to sing.
Classical music.
Mm-hmm. But there were no children's songs that you sang at the piano.
Oh, I suppose we must have had some little...
Ditty?
Yeah, some simple thing, but not, it wasn't a big...
Welcoming spring, and you know, that's the kind of stuff that kids sing.
No,
yeah,
I don't think so.
And then Christmas is coming, and
well, we always sang Christmas.
We did Christmas carols, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think one of you said something about this teacher that he was such a sweet guy and he'd bring something of present at Christmas time.
Mr. Hill was very,
the same teacher,
very well, I think our folks were very kind to him, and so. He always remembered all four of us every Christmas with either 5 nickels so we could buy candy bar or candy bars. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have candy. I mean, that was a real treat to have candy.
I remember
and
the first Hershey
bar. I took my 5 nickels one Christmas, and I don't remember if it was Mary or my younger sister, Gwen. I thought it'd be such fun. Our house was 2-story on one end, to throw the nickels out in that bushes and then go find them. It'd be quite a treasure to find 5 nickels. Well, to this day, nickels are still out there because they were never found again.
Imagine throwing, that'd be like throwing $5 bills or something out now.
I wonder if these people are speaking up loud enough for that thing. Usually, if you tell someone to speak up, they'll speak up for about 2 sentences and they'll drop back into their...
Right.
Right?
Yes, yes. Okay.
So there, maybe we could hear a little bit about school. I understand.
It was Grange.
It was at the Grange School, right?
Center School, it was called.
Mm-hmm. And, but all three of you went off to school when you reached a certain level, and that was to...
Well, we couldn't graduate from Lopus Island. They didn't have an accredited high school, so we all had to go for our senior years.
But, off island.
Mm-hmm.
And some kids went over to Friday Harbor, but your family chose that you would go to...
The Cedar Woolley.
But, Joan, didn't you say that you went more than 1 year?
I went 3 years.
3 years.
And then Joan came back, and I couldn't remember.
I wanted to come back, and I was working for my room and board in a very household that... really required me to do a little beyond what I should have been having to do for room and board.
Because you were all at what, 15 or so?
I was 15 when I left. And so I came back for a semester because the high school was just opened. There were 8 of us that were in that class. And then I went back for my junior and senior year.
To Cedar Woolley.
Cedar Woolley. And I worked then, I stayed with the editor of the newspaper, who also published the Orcas Sounder, mm-hmm. and had a home there, and stayed with them and worked in the newspaper office after school.
So it sounds like your parents were bound and determined that you girls were going to get, or all you kids were going to get, a good education.
Oh, right? There wasn't a...
They wanted us to have a higher education.
They weren't going to let us stay on Lopus and just drop out, like some of them did.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way.
So well, come high school time, you guys had to, were totally separated from your families. You weren't coming home on weekends.
No, no. We came home Thanksgiving and Christmas and spring break, I guess. That was about it.
I had to come home every other weekend.
Well, you were lucky. See, you were younger. Maybe this made a difference. A few years in that
George, you were younger than Joan?
I'm younger than anybody.
Younger than anybody.
Say you're younger.
But I
I'm
think
even younger than you
things
are.
Changed
well,
a lot in those few years.
Because
the economy and different things changed a lot in just those few years.
And which years are we talking about, Mary?
Well, I went in 41 and 2, so.
And I was from 42 to 45.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on to Pullman, Washington State. It was a college then. And somebody asked me, why didn't you go to the university? It would be so much closer. And I said, well, my folks just said that's where I was going. So off I went with the county agent and his wife.
Well, I think that was the reason we didn't bring up 4-H Club, but that was how a lot of us got quite a bit of an education from being in the 4-H Club, which was, you know, I was sponsored by a county affair, and we learned the cooking and the sewing and whatever over at Lena Wilson's. But my first real trip alone, or whatever you want to call it, was to 4-H camp in Pullman. And there were two of us, Irma Caulfield and I think we're the only two from Lopus that went, I don't know. And they were from Orcas and Friday Harbor, and we went to Pullman too, to the state.
Yeah, and I did that too, three or four years later.
On the bus or the train or
we
what?
We went on the train, first train trip. I mean, I think I was car sick, but I didn't know it. Yeah, it was.
That's a long ways.
Yeah, well, we went to Mount Vernon and got on the train and went to Pullman.
Even today, Pullman's hard to get to.
And I remember we stopped in Spokane at the big Davenport Hotel for some, you know. Yeah, it was a big outing to be able to do that.
So this is 4-H camp. Mm-hmm. And what did you do? So 4-H played an important role in those years.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Well, like it still does today.
It's revitalized here on Locus, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
They're active.
Well, Dad had the boys 4-H, and I don't know if George was too young, but they all had to raise a calf.
And I remember raise what?
Calf.
A calf.
Yeah. A calf. And I remember just recently Lawrence Wilson writing to me and saying he was so remembering back how my dad took time to have 4-H and how Mother worked so hard on the farm while Dad was doing this, of course.
So I don't come from a family of 4-H, so was that like when I was a kid, it was Girl Scouts? Was 4-H a group kind of like that?
It was
weekly?
Yeah, we met, I don't know, once, I don't know if we how often we met, but we met at Lena's on a Saturday. Sometimes we went after
this
school.
This was at Lena Wilson's?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the Kring's house now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it was always on a Saturday, because remember the time that you and I were to go and we put the pan, the roaster in the oven, because we didn't have time to wash it or something.
We hid it, Mary. We didn't put it in the oven. We hid it in the back porch.
And Mother's trying to
not knowing it. Mother was wanting to use that later before we got home.
And it hadn't been cleaned.
No, I don't think we took
time
for that.
We didn't want to take the time to clean it.
We wanted to go to 4-H, and so away we went.
Well, so we didn't go the next month.
Was 4-H something brand new, or had it been in existence for some time?
No, 4-H had been in existence for a long time, and I think different women sort of stepped forward to be the leader.
Yeah.
I mean, there was Esther Hammond and Wanda Blake. And
they taught
people.
Us to embroidery.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it was. It had to be like a WPA project or a government thing, because that's how we learned to make certain things out of nothing, you know, take a fruit jar and take crepe paper and twist it and glue it on.
Yeah.
Macaroni,
stick of macaroni on stuff. Really,
it was
like,
but
like
we did, and I did learn, we had a cooking year too, because I remember making the baking powder biscuits and shipping them off to the fair in Friday Harbor. Now, we didn't have paper plates. We didn't have saran wrap. We didn't have, how did we get them there, and how did they stay halfway fresh so they could judge them and send me back a blue ribbon? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you wonder?
Well, and you got the blue ribbon.
I got the blue ribbon.
How old were you, Mary?
I don't know.
There must have been any other biscuits on them.
Oh, George!
I was the only one that sent the biscuits, I'm sure.
And I made a brindle skirt, a broomstick skirt,
oh.
And it actually went to the fair on a broomstick, twisted on a broomstick.
Did you get an award, John?
Yeah, I got a blue ribbon. Probably was the only skirt there.
I remember I went to the fair one time when I was 13 years old. That was when Uncle
Nick passed out.
Everybody, Aunt Kate wanted to go to the fair, so they put her in my dad's car, and we went by car, by, you know, ferry.
That's
and
a different
Uncle
year.
Nick took the
That's
little
a
boat.
Different year. Aunt Kate didn't go the year that he died. She's standing in the bedroom window watching him walk up to Walter Downer's and saying, "This is really funny. Oh, poor Nick, he's beginning to look old." I don't remember what else she said about him. And he didn't come back. He passed out down Lopez.
Right where the Baker Cafe is.
Mm-hmm, right where the Baker Cafe is. And
we went down there to take a look at him, and here he was laying there just like he was taking a nap.
He was on his way to the fair?
No, they came back from the fair, and we all came back on the ferry.
And this was when the ferry landed where the Bay Cafe is?
It was a little boat. Yeah. And they came back on the little boat, and we came back on the ferry. And somebody sent somebody down to the ferry landing to get Dad and said, "Nick just passed out." Well, we just, you know, what does that mean? And so Dad and Owen took off to go to Lopez to see what they could do. And we got in Aunt Eva's car, which was that little coupe, and we were all behind the seat or something. Can you remember this, John?
Yeah, crammed in there.
We were all crammed in, and we got up to Aunt Kate's, and Mother Eva had to go in and tell Aunt Kate what happened. And to this day, Joan, I swear we heard Aunt Kate yelling.
And hear her crying clear out
the road. House was, the road really was pretty, the road went around closer to the house, I think, than it does now. And we had to sit out in that car and wait forever for Mother to come back out and tell her, "Well, we better go home, and I better stay with Aunt Kate." Mm-hmm. And finally Dad showed up, but that was when Nick died. And so.
And that's when they also kept the...
I believe you're wrong. Aunt Kate went to the fair because that's the reason to take the car over.
That's a different year, because I don't think Aunt Kate ever went to a fair.
Well, I think she did that time.
Well, she was there when we got home, because Aunt Eva drove up the road and said, "Okay, May, I guess we got to go in and tell her."
Do you think the fair was much different in those days than it is today?
Oh, yes, it was very simple. I don't remember much about it, but there wasn't.
Well, they showed the calf that had been raised.
A fair then was mostly
farm
animals and cooking and canning and flowers and I think the last fair I went to was pretty commercial of things, you know. That
I remember
so
my
different.
Dad gave me 50 cents for the fair, and that covered everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get in the gate for 50 cents.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
Not today.
No.
No, it's expensive.
No.
Well, what was it like when you got sick?
I got sick, and I got well.
You'd better.
Well, it was a rather, when you look back, it's lucky that we all stayed as well as we did. I mean, sure, I had the measles. I got
And I went in to feel them on her face, so I got the measles.
Okay.
That was after, on the way home from a trip to Friday Harbor, I had been to Pullman. When I came back 10 days later, I got the measles. But we'd gone to Friday Harbor that day, Dad and Mother. And if I remember right, we must have had a truck, or else the person on Friday Harbor picked us up in a truck, because I remember being really cold and thinking, this ain't no fun. And then the next day, Dad opened the bedroom door to say, "Get up," and took one look at me and said, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. And I had the measles. Well, of course, she had to come and peek.
I had to come peek. Mother said all four of us had the measles, and we drug it out all summer.
Because Mother said, "Don't go in there." Well, she should have sent everybody in at once and get it over
with. We could have all had it.
Oh, that was something about keeping us out from looking at the sunshine or the light or something.
Yeah,
I mean,
dark room.
Yeah, because of your eyes.
I guess, but anyway.
And that's the only time I really remember being sick as a child.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
today,
kids are just plagued with those ear infections and penicillin or antibiotics all the time, and
we didn't have
have any choice. It's like when I caught my foot in the playhouse, whatever they call that woodshed at center. I'm the last kid out, and the wind blew the door shut on my ankle, and my foot stayed, and I went, and I couldn't walk, and they had to call Dad to come get me, and all of that. And Mother just looked at it and put it in a bucket of water or something and said, no, I don't think anything's broken. And I didn't go to school for about a month because, I mean, it hurts. And I still have a weak ankle from that.
Yeah.
But, you know, as long as...
You probably bruised it, which was worse
tore,
than...
Well, later, yeah. An orthopedic doctor said, oh, yeah, when you tear those ligaments, they never go back to what they were. And I remember when I was in high school and we were supposed to go, you know, the last day of school, go somewhere. I think we were supposed to go to Orchestra Friday Harbor, and I was sick. And I really was sick. And about 10 days later and lost, I don't know, 10 pounds, Mother finally took me to Anacortes to the doctor. And, well, she must have an intestinal infection. Well, there was no antibiotics. 3 days in that Anacortes hospital, and I guess she can go home. They never did figure out what's the matter. And now we all know I had an appendicitis attack because years later I had to have my appendix out. But I was really sick, but nobody knew what. And Gwen had her appendix out also that same year.
Mm-hmm. So when things got really bad, they'd put you on the boat and take you to Anacortes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that only happened a couple times in your childhood.
And if you were really sick, they called the Coast Guard to take you to Anacortes.
Well, I guess so. But actually, there was a doctor in Friday Harbor that came over. It was really great. Dr. Heath would come at the drop of a hat.
And what was his name?
Dr. Heath. Remember him?
Yeah. He was drunk.
He was what? No, he wasn't.
He was drunk half the time.
That was Dr. Bates. Or Dr.
Heath.
No.
Yeah.
Joan, do you believe that? I don't.
I don't recall. George, on another topic, segue here. Tell us about the time you got the earache and what they did for your ear.
Oh, Dr. Bates, he was a surgeon in Seattle, and he had an island out there where Scripps lives now, or owns, I suppose. And him and two other doctors built this salve. It was black old salve. And you could put it on your hand and you could wipe the surplus off, but the stain's still there. And he'd come over and I had an earache and he filled my ear with black salve and they put a bandage around it. And I guess I probably ruined pillowcases and sheets and everything else. And you couldn't read. After the earache left, my mother could scoop out the surplus, but I had a black ear for a couple weeks.
Couldn't do that. So when you aren't deaf, do you
have any idea what was in the black salve?
No.
Sounds like tar.
Sounds like
tar.
Wow, Bob Wilson would have some fun with all this, wouldn't he? Wow.
Well, Mother was a nurse, and so there was a lot of home
remedies.
Well, anybody that didn't have, if they had children, then there was something wrong. Now, Hazel Lundy had... Hazel Dorothy and
Marianne.
Well, that was later, but the first one. And Hazel was quite a ways up there when she had her. And she wouldn't stop crying, and Oliver's pacing the floor and says, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And Hazel says, call Mae McLeod. So Mae McLeod comes down and rocks the baby and tells Oliver there's nothing wrong with it and so forth, and that was fine. But Ethel Gallinger, they had about five kids, maybe. Mm-hmm. Every time the kid was... any of them, something wrong, call me. And Mother would go. I don't know what she did, but she was a nurse. So she, well, Clark Lovejoy tells about this big scar on his hand that he cut, cutting Aunt Kate's wood, missed the block and cut his hand. And Mother put it back together. And I said, you know what? She probably just wrapped a piece of sheeting around it. And he says, you're right. You know,
she always had torn
strips,
sheeting.
White
strips.
We didn't have Band-Aids,
in the first
remember.
Aid
sure.
drawer.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like the island kind of relied on your mom because she was the only medical person on the island then?
Well, I don't.
Well, there had
certainly
to be a couple of
center.
More. And there was a
there
Laura
was a
McNally and somebody else and Leora Thomas.
Mrs. Manning.
Did your mother actually learn to be a nurse?
My mother was our mother was a nurse in Wales, in Norwich and Birmingham when she was, well, she went over there when she was 16. And stayed till she
was it 16
she had to stay
15?
Because of World War One.
It was when she was.
She went when she was 16, with Miss Lewis, the cousin.
And then she met her mother's brother, and he said, "Come over to our place and meet the family. You know about history."
Mm-hmm.
And but being young and stupid, She never went.
I know, she missed out on that, but she did live with all the other whales relatives. Mm. And
to this day, we are in touch with all those.
Mm. And that's wonderful.
Relatives.
But Grandpa Higgins wanted her to go with this cousin that was coming from Wales for her to visit. Wanted her to go back to get an education. Like, one of the aunts was a seamstress and one was a piano teacher, one was a teacher. So she went, and that was, and then the war broke out, so she couldn't come back, so she became a nurse for 8 years, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I think she
eight, almost there. 9 years.
Wow. And that was wonderful to have.
Oh, yes. And that was one of the things that Mother always impressed upon us, that, you know, there's more to life than just whatever, and you need to have an education, and you need to do this, and you need to get away, and, I mean, it was really important to her that I was the only one that was a failure, but I don't think she figured that out.
No, Mary fell in love early.
No, I went to work to earn money. My folks couldn't afford to send me. I remember having this big argument. Mother practically had tears in her eyes. I think she did. She had sent away for all these pamphlets from Seattle Pacific College. Mm-hmm. She was insisting that I was going to go, and I came back from Cedar Willy, and I had said to her before I came back, because she was a little bit upset that I was still over there working in a drugstore. And she said, well, you know, here's all this information. And I said, I don't want it. And I don't want to be a nurse. I can't stand the thought of it. And it's not for me. And, well, now, you know, if you just go for a quarter or a semester or just give it a try. And I just came right out and said, you people can't afford it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was hard times. And anyway.
Mary was practical.
I was practical, and
yeah.
I said, I need to just find a job, which I did. I went to work for Dun & Bradstreet.
They just said, you're going to Pullman.
Well, Mother could never figure out why Catherine McClintock, who I had lived with in Cedar Willy, didn't insist. And I said, Mother, I think I probably made it plain. I just felt like I wasn't college material. I wasn't interested in any of this. And, you know, and so then I went to work, and now nobody knows what Dun & Bradstreet is.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of a credit.
Sure.
No.
There was a lot of trade schools about that time.
Well, that
you could
was
go
true.
To trade yeah. school and learn an occupation, or you could go to college to learn nothing.
Mm-hmm. My mom went to secretarial school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I learned on the job, and then later I went to work for Best Apparel in Seattle, which later became Nordstrom's or something. But, you know, that was...
And now with the... college tuitions being just so astronomical that they're seeing the benefits of these trade schools,
mm-hmm.
and more and more
yes.
are opening up.
Right.
And we need
absolutely.
That.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, to change the subject yet again, one of the things we were going to ask you guys, we're making this interview in May, and we're looking ahead to summertime. Can you tell us about the 4th of July on Lopez and where the island gathered and what kind of celebrations you had?
Well, it was at Odlin Park, 4th of July.
A salmon bake? Salmon was baked in a pit.
For nothing.
And yeah, you're right. I don't think there was any charge
and
for anything.
And who organized it? Was it the commercial club?
Yes, it was. Well, later it was American Legion, but the beginning was commercial club.
And after the American Legion, it was?
The Lions Club.
The Lions
they
Club.
They took over, but... Mm-hmm. The original was, you know, and there again, there was only, what, Dad, Roy Jensen, and a couple more that did all this. And I can remember the first time, I'm sure it was the first time we ever had ice cream, actually real ice cream. They brought it over from Friday Harbor on, was it Eston Cars, a little fair boat?
You paid for the ice cream.
We might have done that. And it came in a big green canvas thing, and it was up by that little shack that you can hardly see that's left at Odlin
Still
Park.
There.
That little piece of wood shack. And it was the same year that they also had firecrackers this big, big ones. And I remember Dad and Roy dishing out the ice cream. They didn't have any ice cream cones, so we were getting it on a cup or a plate or whatever.
An orange pop.
Oh, yes.
Was it Orange Crush?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Type of orange.
That was
best the ice cream is called New York.
Oh, yes.
I had to go back to Montana 4 or 5 years ago, be able to get
New York ice cream
was
very popular that season. But then the men would go play baseball down at the where the
field is. And they'd had sack races.
Mm-hmm.
They had all kinds of things for kids prior to the baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
So place us in time here. What years are we talking about when this was the whole community would gather?
Early 40s, probably.
I imagine. I don't remember why we didn't, what we did before that.
Because I wasn't that old to remember what went on before that.
But that was a big thing. The women just brought potato salad and whatever, and there was no refrigeration.
Cream
and the
pies.
Old original building literally fell down when they redid it. But it was just the families just showed up.
Then out in the woods there where you ate, they had benches with the table of a bench, and
mm-hmm.
if somebody was sitting at the far end,
don't get
up. Remember, Doc McLeod had his kilt on, and he sat at the end, and my folks, and I don't know, someone all got up at the same time, and Doc was sitting on the ground.
They dumped him right over, huh?
That was another thing. Dad always played the bagpipes on the 4th of July at Ogland Park.
And that's where they really should be heard, out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get kids go swimming?
What? No, we didn't even go wading in there. That was too cold. That water was cold. We did go wading, though.
We did go
different
wading.
Times. And that was the thing that in the summer, our folks would take us occasionally with a picnic lunch to a beach.
And Dad taught me how to float. And it's
where,
much easier
Joan?
at Agate Beach.
Okay.
That's a cold one, too.
And that's a cold, cold water, but he wanted me to know how to float because we'd go to the beach and we were told we'd go by ourselves and they were told never to go past over our head and then come into shore. And so to this day, all four of us had fear of deep water.
I didn't even learn to do, no, they didn't even teach me to
float. I took lessons
to
overcome it, but as soon as I knew I was over my head, I turned into a rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken
that
lessons
water was cold,
to
and I just didn't, whatever, but I think Todd's beach was warmer, and I think we did go
there.
Yeah,
that's where
we
both
but we always went wading. And
where's Todd's beach?
Well,
Jones Bay.
Richardson.
So another thing on 4th of July, you said there was a kind of an amphitheater of sorts built into the side of the hill there. Can somebody describe that?
It's a grandstand.
A grandstand.
With logs.
Still there. You can still see the logs.
What's that?
The grandstand at Ogland Park.
Yeah.
Is it up above the softball field? Is
that
it's still there. It's covered with trees and bushes and you can't see it.
If you look real close.
Years, many years later, we were here for the 4th of July, and Howard was parked behind the backstop, and a ball came over and hit our front window. I remember that, getting a crack.
George, you had a story about some firecrackers at the 4th of July.
I thought I gave it.
Tell us again.
Okay, we were sitting up on the bleachers, and we were throwing firecrackers, and this old guy that was the caretaker down there, he was talking with another guy, and they were down a couple of seats below or off the side, and I see this firecracker that lit on his shoulder, and of course it was, you couldn't get to it in time to knock it off, probably 30 feet away, and it went off, and he used to claim that was by caused his deafness, but he was probably deaf before that anyway.
Well,
probably it was a lot deafer that day, though.
Definitely.
And it was, as I recall, it was a good-sized firecracker, wasn't it?
Well, we couldn't, obviously, we probably couldn't afford those bigger ones. We just had those little things like about this.
Yeah.
Half a dozen of them.
But it was a great day. We always probably over ate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got to tell you, we've got about 5 minutes left here, but, you know, it is just such a delight to imagine these days of, you know, the family gathering in your parlor, playing all these musical instruments, and
did they play games? You know, like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, Mother wasn't for playing cards, so we didn't get to play cards until much later when we learned about Old Maid or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got to play checkers and parcheesi and cards.
Yeah.
And what about chess? And
the men played chess down at Richardson. But I don't remember. I guess we had
checkers. And they also played
aggravation later, our parents cribbage. Played aggravation. Cribbage. Oh, cribbage, yes. Yeah. An aggravation that our folks played in
pinochle
later years.
Pinochle was a big game among the grown-ups, if you were smart enough.
Mm-hmm.
One time I asked my dad to teach me, and he says, I was 13 years old, and he says, you're not smart enough. Bart Ann Hodson asked her dad, and he got the same answer.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of us ever learned to play pinochle.
Well, I think a lot of people did play cards in their homes in those years.
Can ask them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was against your family's religious beliefs.
Well, Mother wasn't much for playing cards because what it would lead into.
Yeah.
And what would that be, Mary? What would
cards
lead into?
Well, I think it must have been gambling. I don't know.
Gambling.
She never explained
that.
She never went farther than...
But later years, after they were about 85, they used to meet with two other couples. And they were, I thought... My mother is shaking dice
and playing aggravation every Tuesday
and
night.
She always won.
Yeah. Or also, the American Legion did bingo. And my mother would have this, I'd show up and I'd say, Mother, where'd you get this? Oh, I won that at bingo. You what? But that wasn't much later years. It's interesting how our parents changed when they got to about 70 years old. They took a trip to Scotland and Wales and they didn't have to worry about the farm anymore, and it was really
interesting.
That's
just like a tour boat. You go on a tour boat, and they used to say, look at all this, the young stuff, there wasn't a bit, because the people that go on tour boats, they don't go on tour boats when their kids are going to school or when they're paying for their house or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So when their kids are all gone, and their house is paid for, and that's when they go on tour boat, when they're in their 70s and 80s.
True.
Mm-hmm. I have one other thing on my list. Allie, you might have more. But you all were could you tell us a little bit about bath time? And
who wants to talk about that? George, you want to tell about Saturday night baths? We all had an aluminum tub. Saturday night bath.
Well,
the lucky
everybody
one
had
got
a big wash tub.
Everybody had the wash tub.
And
the water was
the first guy got the good water, and the
second guy
third,
got
fourth, first washed in the old dirty water.
Apparently.
Didn't
and
have
the water
dirty
was
water.
Heated on the wood in the kitchen, and the water was heated on the wood stove and heated an extra tea kettle
ready
every
for Sunday church.
But there was I'm still thinking, how strange, there's no curtains on this, on our kitchen windows and on your kitchen windows. There was no curtains. Anybody could have come up and had a real show. Oh, look at the McLeod kids, they're all having their bath. But everybody knew, it was rather a strange thing. Nobody went visiting Saturday night, I don't think, because everybody knew they were all having
their
baths.
Yeah, they were respectful.
I guess.
Yeah.
It was sort of a strange...
One time, we had a solid door at that time, and Hodson was supposed to come up, and there was the rumor passed, and Margaret Ann was coming with him. And
you were in the
so
bathtub.
My dad sneaked, had two doors to the house, that he sneaked around, and he knocked on the door, and my brother leaped out of there and fell down, and he finally made it to the bedroom. There wasn't anybody at the door.
Well, thank you all so much for this beautiful hour of reminiscence. We hope that all you listeners will tune in again next month for Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez.